ගරු ගජේන්ද්‍ර කුමාර් පොන්නම්බලම් ගරු මන්ත්‍රීතුමා විනාඩි 18ක කාලයක් ඔබතුමන්ට තියෙනවා.
Honorable presiding member, I wish to make a few comments on the Human Rights Commission as the head comes under this debate under head number 13. You might be aware, Honorable presiding member, during the last parliament I took part in the debate on this very same head, and I raised certain issues with regards to the commission, functioning of the commission and its credibility, because the chairman of the commission along with some members had visited the northern province and had visited and met with members of the families of the disappeared who had been protesting for years, and subsequently when she and rest of the members came to Colombo, issued a statement which was completely untrue, which was that the members of the commission had after speaking to those victims or victim communities, the victim communities had apparently agreed to compensation, and I condemned that, and I very clearly stated on record that it was a falsehood. Now, why I said that was because, and I made this point even last year during the previous budget, the Human Rights Commission, when we have doubts with regards to police and how the police work, because we believe that the police, especially in the Northeast, is heavily militarized. It works on a counterinsurgency mode and therefore is very hostile to the local population. And the truth of the matter, Honorable Presiding Member, is that most of the senior police officers and even juniors are in the Northeast on punishment transfers. So the attitude towards the people is very hostile. They don't speak the language. So when and they are heavily influenced by political forces. So we rely entirely on the Human Rights Commission to put things right, to inquire into misdeeds of the police, and we expect them to intervene. That's the only hope that we have in a domestic scenario. So when the Human Rights Commission behaved in this manner in the previous during the previous government, we raised issues. Now, during the previous government, our party members and a few people who were protesting in a place called Thayyatti the police tried to get a ban against that protest. They went to the magistrate's court, and the honorable magistrate refused to give a ban. But the magistrate laid certain conditions with regards to how protests must be done. And we were very strictly observing those conditions, but despite that, the Palali police, OIC, under the directions of the OIC, went ahead and arrested members of our party and the public, journalists, lawyers who came there when they heard that despite the magistrate not giving the ban on the protests, the police were arresting. The lawyers who represented us in court came to that spot. The lawyer was arrested. Now, 8 complaints, Honorable Presiding Member, were made to the Human Rights Commission. 8 complaints were made. I will give you the numbers. HRC JA 165 to 172 in the year 2023. HRC JA 165 to 172 2023. Now, these complaints were made on the day of this incident. We called the Human Rights Commission representative in Jaffna. He came to the site. Police refused him to interview the victims who were inside. The police were literally sieging those protesters. And when the Human Rights Commission official from Jaffna wanted to meet the victims and see and find out information for himself, the police refused and threatened to arrest him also. Then subsequently, after we were some of these protesters were produced in court and bail, they went and made complaints to the Human Rights Commission. To date, there has been no inquiry. When we made when we searched as to what was going on, we were informed by the office in Jaffna that there were complaints made by the Palali police to the Human Rights Commission at that time, saying that the representative of the commissioner in Jaffna was being influenced by us, and therefore the file was sent to Colombo. Fine, let the file go to Colombo, but still no inquiry at all. Now this is very important, Honorable Presiding Member, because that is the only avenue we have. If we are questioning the legitimacy and the genuinity of the police or any government institution, and we feel that we have been wronged by them, the only place that we have to go to is the commission. And if the commission is not behaving in that independent way where they must intervene, regardless of who it is, you must have that inquiry, and if you're not having that inquiry, then it becomes a problem. So this was under the previous government. I urge that this government must emphasize to the commission that they have the freedom, and in fact the legitimacy to make those investigations and see through those investigations is very important. And if that doesn't happen, Honorable Presiding Member, then we'll have to question every single thing that the government does with regards to accountability. Now the Honorable Foreign Minister in Geneva has gone and made statements. He's spoken seemingly quite progressively, saying that they're very serious about this transitional justice, that they are going to strengthen the officers of the missing persons, strengthen the office of reparations, strengthen the office of national unity and reconciliation. They have said that they are also going to create Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which will look at wartime incidents and will take things forward. Not a word, though, Honorable Presiding Member, not one word about criminal justice. Now, you know that in transitional justice, criminal investigations and prosecutions are probably the most important part of that. If that is not there, everything else that the Honorable Foreign Minister spoke about in Geneva amounts to a cover-up. You are trying to cover up without having prosecutions, without prosecuting people who committed genocide. You are trying to cover it up. That is what is going to end up. And I am saying this with utmost responsibility, because on the 27th of August in 2024, the current president had publicly said that there will not be one prosecution against wartime atrocities. He has said it in public several times. So then what are these comments that the foreign minister is making? What he is saying in reality is that there will never be accountability, that it will be covered up. There will be some commission where people go there, they will be asked to cry, people will cry, and then they are supposed to hug and kiss, and then that's it. That's the end of it. So this is worrisome, because this is the same thing that the previous foreign minister Ali Sabri said. He said that these commissions, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the Office of Missing Persons, ONUR, all of these are to cover up, to make sure that prosecutions never happen. And he bragged about it. So surely when you come into power saying system change, you can't be saying the same thing. You can't have the same intentions. What is the system change then? So the president whose head is being debated today must intervene if he is to remain credible. If the people of the Northeast are to genuinely believe that this government is going to in fact bring that system change, then you have to make sure that surely you can't say system change and do the same thing that the previous government did. There's something wrong there. So that has to change. I also want to mention a few things on the budget in itself, Honorable Honorable Presiding Members, certain matters that I actually ran out of time on the 25th that I want to bring up. There is a mention of the government wanting to set up a development bank. Now, Honor, I don't know whether that is an actual requirement, because there are development banks in Sri Lanka. There is a lot of wastage. There is a lot of wastage. There is a lot of mismanagement. And the answer to that is not the setting up of a new bank. I don't think that is the way to go about it. Instead, I think the government must intervene and must ensure that that wastage is prevented. And through that, preventing such wastage, I think there can be low-interest loans, loan schemes facilitated. Certainly for the Northeast, that is very important, because we have very weak collaterals that we can offer. I think that would be a recommendation that I would like to make. The second matter, Honourable Presiding Member, is the question of microfinance. You know, soon after the war was completed, I think the previous central bank governor, the respected Indrajit Kumaraswamy, came public and said that it was daylight crime that this microfinance facilities were allowed to go into the war-affected areas, because it literally got those people trying to recover after the war into a debt trap. And he actually recommended that the government must in some way intervene. I strongly urge that this government looks into that matter. I would certainly suggest that the loans must be cancelled. Those microfinance loans that were taken must be cancelled, or at the very least, a 50% waiver must be ensured by the government. I think that's a very important thing, particularly in the Northeast. I think Anuradhapura also outside the Northeast was very badly hit, but I think that is something that you must get involved in. The second matter is with regards to IT services. Now, IT services, in the past, there were a lot of incentives given, Honorable Presiding Member. The Western Province, especially Colombo, benefited tremendously from it. There were a lot of incentives given. IT business outsourcing is an important economic activity, turns in huge foreign exchange. The Western Province, because it was started early, as I said, benefited the most. But in the Northeast, this is only now picking up. Primarily because of diaspora investments, there is a considerable amount of activity in this sector in the Northeast. But unfortunately, come this April, all the incentives that were offered comes to an end. So I again would like to urge this government to ensure that those incentives in fact continue. If you don't want to give it to the entire Northeast, at least to the entire country, but at least to the Northeast, because once again, this is why I said in the second reading debate, you have to look at the Northeast in a separate way, because it is a war-affected area. It lags about 30, 40 years behind the rest of the country. And if you think that certain policies to be given to the entire country is a waste or it can't be afforded, but at least the Northeast must be seen differently. And this is one sector that is very actively being looked at by the youth and must be certainly strengthened. The one other matter that I wish to state, Honourable Presiding Member, is that with regards to this withholding tax. Now, withholding tax, to my understanding, has increased from 5% to 10%. I don't know how that is going to benefit, because it, you know, I mean, the tendency will be not to save, and the people who are going to be most affected are the elder, the senior citizens. They depend entirely on those savings. And if the tax is increased in this way, with today's cost of living, they will struggle, certainly in the Northeast. If their family doesn't remit money from their foreign countries, I think they will. Yeah. Don't take.
Garomatuma.
Withhold tax පිළිබඳ කාරණේද ගරු මන්ත්‍රීතුමා තියෙන්නේ 150,000 දක්වා tax release වෙනවා. ඒ නිසා ඒ විතරක් නෙමෙයි 5 සිට 10 දක්වා වැඩි කරපු withholding tax එක මේ අයට නැවත ලැබෙනවා. මොකද withholding tax එක අය නොකරන පිරිසක් ඉන්නවා. ඒ නිසා බදු වැඩි වෙනවා වගේම ඒ අය 150,000 දක්වා බදු නිදහස් කරලා තියෙනවා. ඒ නිසා ඒකට බැංකුවටම register වෙලා ඒ 150,000 දක්වා එක නිදහස් වෙනවා උඹ.
Gajan Kumar.
I am quite happy to accept that, but I'm just saying, at the very least for senior citizens, if you can think in terms of waiving it off. But if your justification, I'm raising it on a genuine, in a genuine way. If you think that your answer will satisfy that, I'm not convinced. But at least for the senior citizens, my view is that you must waive it. Then the other thing is, with regards to the speech, I just noticed in the annexures to the speech, I think it's the fourth annexure, to the Honorable Finance Minister, the President's...
I'll
wind up. It says here, under 6.4, an appeal to the TAC, that is the Tax Appeals Commission, will not be permitted unless a cash deposit of a sum of equivalent to 25% of the disputed amount is amount of assessment of tax, penalty and interest is deposited in a special account opened by the Commissioner General of Internal Revenue. Now that sounds quite frightening. You know, it effectively prevents anybody from making an appeal. So whatever that is assessed, essentially, effectively, it means it cannot be called into question at all. You know, when I don't know, once again, whether this is a correct way to go about it. I do realize that people in the past, for the slightest thing, tend to go and appeal. But to make it almost impossible for a person to appeal, in a scenario where you really want people to come into this country, where you want investors to come in, they will have to pay tax. But if you give the impression that it's going to be difficult, if they think that it's been, something unfair has happened, it's going to be difficult or impossible for them to query that, then I think it's going to have the complete opposite effect. So that is something that also I think you should look at. I also want to refer to paragraph 6.8 of the same Tax Appeals Commission Act. I think these are amendments that you all are thinking in terms of. It's 6.8 says, submission of any evidence that was not previously submitted to the CGIR during the assessment or the administrative review process and taking up new issues which were not taken, stroke disputed during the assessment or the administrative review process during hearing of appeal will not be allowed. I mean, that sounds ridiculous. That you can't, from the initial stage, that you can't at any stage think in terms of introducing new evidence. I mean, I think it is in breach of our own constitution. Because when new evidence is available, which was not available, and a determination has been made, but when this new evidence is taken then the whole determination has to be reversed. And if you are just trying to say that you can't do it, then I think there is something wrong. That is definitely against the notions of natural justice, and I think that is also something that you have to look at, because these are all things that will actually make people go away. It actually, this section 6.8, okay, if this prevails, will make sure corruption gets worse, fraud gets worse, because you will go directly to the person at the very instance and try to get him to do things that you want, and it will actually breed corruption. So I think you need to relook at that. But I certainly want to re-emphasize, Honorable Presiding Member, this government can't go down the path that previous governments went. That was my main point with regards to the budget when we voted against also. All right. Our concern is that we have been wronged in the past. There are serious issues. Your government itself says that in the last 77 years there was racism, that we are victims, that minorities, especially the Tamils, are victims of racism. Means you can't do the same thing. You can't tell us that your approach to the issues of the Northeast is going to be the same as the previous governments. And that is what, unfortunately, today's scenario seems to be. Thank you.
Mr. Garu Mandituma.